Hello and happy Tuesday. This is Nancy reading to you today from Your Sun Chronicle. It is April 7th, 2026. Our cover story is Out of Plainville by Stephen Peterson. Albert wins in Plainville. Stephen Albert is the town's newest select board member, and voters at Monday's annual town election decided three other contests as well. Albert, chairman of the local school committee, with 296 votes, edged out two challengers, former select board member Stanley Wydack at 253 votes and housing authority member Andrew LaBerge at 254 votes for a three-year term on the select board. Albert is in his second year on the school board. Wydack is a longtime planning board member who has served two stints on the select board. LaBerge heads the local Democratic Town Committee. The inaugural term of the Select Board Vice Chairwoman Maggie Clark was expiring, but Clark didn't take out nomination papers. She ousted Wydack from the board 3 years ago. It was certainly a well-conducted race, well-run campaign by everyone. No negativity, Albert said. I was very, very pleased. Albert said his first priority is to gather information. There are so many important issues before the town, he said. For a three-year term on the King Philip Regional School Committee, Michelle Sharp, with 398 votes, defeated Housing Authority member Alex Kinney, 352 votes. Committee member Gregory Waymeyer didn't pull nomination papers. For a five-year slot on the planning board, Robert Belcher came out on top with 452 votes over board member Christopher Desprez with 316 votes. And for a fourth race for a three-year seat on the Board of Library Trustees, incumbent Paula Jean LaMontagne Mealy with 456 votes easily won over Lily M. Quagliazzi with 276 votes. Turnout was typical of a local election, but with four races, many expected more voters. A total of 809, or 10.47% of the town's 7,727 registered voters, cast ballots at the public safety complex. Not too bad, town clerk Cindy Bush, who ran unopposed, along with several other candidates for office. It's really wonderful to see new faces running. About two dozen residents gathered at the town hall to learn the election results. Last year's election had no contests and just 183, or a mere 2.5% of registered voters cast ballots. In a story by Mike Kirby, a new chapter, North Attleboro Senior Center opens to rave reviews. The doors to the new North Attleboro Senior Center had only been open an hour Monday when the reviews came pouring in. "It's wonderful," Shirley Tucson said. "What a bright, sunny room," Lorraine Allard said. "It's got a nice modern look, all new furniture." "And there's plenty of parking," Norman Belanger said. After shutting down for 2 weeks, the North Attleboro Council on Aging reopened Monday at 451 Elm Street, the former Fisher College building across from Mason Field. For about half a century, the Senior City Center was located in the old Victorian-style building known as the Howard Estate, just down the street at 204 Elm Street. The new center was bustling with activity on opening day. One room was filled with about two dozen seniors and an exercise class. Nearby, Patrick Durgan, a regular entertainer at the center, was playing keyboards while seniors enjoyed pastries and coffee. "This is an exciting day," Director Karen Testa said. "You can see the reactions from the seniors. This is a new chapter in our community." What Testa is most anticipating being able to offer more services in the town's to the town's older population. The center now serves about 125 people a day, ranging in age from 60 to 101. The kitchen is much larger than the one at the Howard Estate, enabling the center to potentially increase meals served each week from the present three. Wellness and intergenerational programs will be expanded as there are three activity rooms. The center is looking into offering evening classes at the request of some seniors. And many of the regulars are excited about the arrival of a pool table in the newly restored billiards room, where a volunteer painted a colorful mural and others donated sports memorabilia. Some seniors were concerned about the move and the future of the Howard Estate, but Testa said she has been assured by the owners, the North Attleboro Housing Authority, that the historic structure would be put to good use. Testa thanked the team effort to get the new center open, which included her staff, the Department of Public Works, which moved any heavy equipment, and State Representative Adam Scanlon, a Democrat from North Attleboro, who secured a grant that allowed the Council on Aging to buy new furniture. The Health Department and Veterans Services Office have already moved into the building that will serve as a town hall annex. Lenore's Pantry, the town's food pantry run by the Board of Health, will also be relocating to the building and be part of the regional food pantry there, run in conjunction with the Hockomock Area YMCA. The regional pantry concept helped the town obtain millions of dollars in federal funding to buy and renovate the building. The new location will offer more space for the town pantry that has seen its need grow the past several years. There are plans to name the facility the Lenore Paquin Health and Human Services Center in honor of the town's longtime public health nurse who founded the pantry nearly 50 years ago. Some $5.2 million has been set aside from the Federal American Rescue Plan Act pandemic aid for the property. The town acquired the site in late 2023 for $2.24 million, with the remaining funds earmarked for renovations, demolition, and other work. Fisher College bought the building in 1997. It had been occupied by Bristol County Savings Bank and before that, Donley Manufacturing. Testa said the opening was like a dream come true. We wanted to make it bright and welcoming as possible, she said. I think we succeeded. From the City and Town page, Decision 2026, voters decide in Seekonk and Wrentham. Incumbent Select Board member ousted from seat. And this is by Stephen Peterson out of Seekonk. The town has two new members of the Select Board following Monday's annual town election. Robert Archambault had 903 votes and Elizabeth Almazian, 943 votes, were elected to the 2 3-year terms, ousting board chairwoman Michelle Hines, who had 530 votes. Hines had served two stints on the board. The other Select Board member whose seat was expiring was Pamela Pozzi, and she didn't take out candidacy papers. Select Board was the only race in the election. A total of 1,321, or 10.34% of the town's 12,775 registered voters, cast ballots. There was early voting with 219 taking part. Last year, there was also just one race for school committee, but there was a successful ballot question for a tax hike to help pay for the town's share of the new Tri-County Regional Technical Vocational High School under construction. Voter turnout was 1,562, or 12.5%. So, back to Wrentham, voters decide. School committee members Cynthia Fuller and Larry Green were victorious in a three-way contest for two local school committee seats in Monday's annual election. Fuller with 719 votes and Green with 661 votes easily won over a third candidate, Rebecca Weber, who took in 310 votes. The school board has been in the spotlight as plans move forward for a new Roderick Elementary School. That was the sole race in the election. Assessor Edward O'Neill took out nomination papers for a 3-year term, but didn't return them. He ran as a write-in candidate, but results were not available Monday night. A total of 947, or about 9.3%, of the town's 10,216 registered voters cast ballots at the high school poll. Last year, there were an unusual 4 races for select board, 2 contests for school committee, and the Board of Health. A total of about 1,927, or about 19% of voters, cast ballots. In a story out of North Attleboro by Stephen Peterson, Northman gets life for 2024 slaying. A local man has been sentenced to life in prison for killing a man in Boston 1.5 years ago during a domestic dispute. Widmer LePay, age 29, was sentenced Monday for second-degree murder. He'll be eligible for parole in 15 years. He was found guilty Friday by a Suffolk County grand jury. LePay shot Maceo Martin, age 41, a father of 2 children, in October of 2024 in Roxbury. Martin was standing outside an apartment building where his ex-wife was inside with their children, and LePay, they said, adding he was shouting insults and ringing the doorbell around 1:30 a.m. Martin's ex-wife was talking to him through a locked door, trying to get him to leave, when LePay came downstairs and fired a shot from a rifle through the window. Martin was pronounced dead at the hospital. Police had responded to the address for a dispute among the parties about an hour earlier. The ex-wife told police Martin was constantly ringing the doorbell and calling her, and Martin left but later returned. LePay had a license for a rifle, which police seized. A spent .40-caliber shell was found in the front pocket of his sweatshirt. LePay, before he was sentenced, apologized to Martin's family and his own family. Suffolk County District Attorney Kevin Hayden called Martin's death a tragic outcome of quick and terrible decision-making by a person holding a gun. There were other ways this situation could and should have been handled, but those other ways were left unexplored. One life was ended and another dramatically altered as a result. In a story out of Fall River by Stephen Peterson, local man sentenced for assaulting woman. A Seekonk man has been convicted and sentenced for assaulting an Uber driver last year. James D. Oakes, age 26, was convicted Monday by a Fall River Superior Court jury of assault of a person over 60, felony larceny, and interfering with a rideshare driver. He was found innocent of the more serious charges of strangulation or suffocation, kidnapping, and assault with intent to rape. A judge sentenced Oakes to up to 4.5 years in prison, followed by 3 years probation that included a 1 year of GPS monitoring. The jury's verdict comes on the first day of deliberations following closing arguments Friday. The victim, Felicia Cowell, testified she still suffers emotionally and psychologically from the incident and lost her job, her vehicle, and her apartment. She expressed disappointment in the verdict. Oakes had pleaded innocent and maintained that stance throughout the trial. Oakes attached the driver and forced her down a dark, secluded driveway before threatening to kill her last April. Police responded to the area of County Street and Arrowhead Road about 1:30 a.m. that morning, where the victim told police Oakes had finished a beer before getting into the car in North Seekonk. During the ride, he asked the driver numerous times to confirm the address he wanted to be brought to, then tried to cancel the trip. Oakes then gave the driver a new address, which led down what appeared to be an abandoned driveway. The driver asked her passenger to get out of the car, but he allegedly wrapped his arms around her neck and demanded that she continue driving. Police said the driver asked him not to hurt her, but Oakes responded with an inappropriate sexual comment and threatened her life twice when she tried to escape. The driver was eventually able to put the car in drive, hit the gas pedal, and hit the horn, and Oakes jumped out and fled with the victim's cell phone. A neighbor called police, and Oakes was arrested. Oakes last week testified he feared the driver, believing she had consumed alcohol because she appeared to be slurring her words and driving erratically. The vehicle was later seized, and investigators processed the interior for fingerprints, DNA, and photographs. In court, detectives were questioned and a forensic analyst testified. After the incident, the Uber driver was hospitalized for distress. Before the case was moved to Fall River Court, a Taunton District Court judge had agreed with prosecutors that Oakes should be considered a danger to the community. Oakes was also found to have violated his probation for another incident and ordered held without bail. In August 2021, Oakes, who at the time worked as a landscaper, was one of the two suspects arrested for vandalism at the Briarwood Plaza on Olney Street in Seekonk. In the briefs, City School gets money for literacy education. The Attleboro School Department has been given $232,000 in state aid for literacy education. The allotment was part of a $4.3 million grant from the state's Partnership for Reading Success, also known as PRISM 3 program, which helps school districts improve their English language arts and literacy programs for grades 4 through 12. In a story out of Norton by Madison Dunphy, Norton officials get the ear of congressmen. Congressman Jake Auchincloss made a brief visit to Norton on Monday, meeting with local officials to discuss PFAS treatment, declining school enrollment, and other department needs. Auchincloss began his visit at the town's water treatment plant on Plain Street, alongside town manager Mark Gould, Public Works Director Justin Chica, State Senator Paul Feeney, a Democrat from Foxborough, and State Representative Michael Chason, a Republican from Foxborough, and town select board members. Derek Sertoli, primary treatment operator at the plant, explained to Auchincloss how this site, which opened nearly 5 years ago, houses the three largest wells for town in terms of production, which through green sand filters removed the naturally occurring minerals of iron and manganese from the water. The problem that remains, however, is the treatment for PFAS, Sertoli said. This plant does treat for iron and manganese, and it does usually very well, but with the rule changes coming from the state and federal government, we can't make them with this facility, so it either needs to be modified or additional ones need to be added, Sertoli explained to the congressman. PFA is also known as per- and polyfluoric alkali substances, are man-made forever chemicals, meaning they don't break down easily. The compounds are a family of chemicals widely used since the 1950s to manufacture common consumer products and used in some firefighting foams. Drinking water may become contaminated if PFAS deposited onto the soil seep into the groundwater or surface water. PFAS have been linked to a variety of health risks, particularly in women who are nursing or pregnant and in infants. Norton is among many communities who have dealt with PFAS issues since the state began requiring water systems to regularly test for the contaminants in October of 2020. The state standard is 20 parts per trillion for a group of six PFA compounds. Federal standards, as of May, have requirements for some PFAs compounds as low as 4 parts per trillion, and three stages of compliance with the standards, the first of which begins in 2027. We are pumping our daily demands of about 1.3 million gallons. 1 million of that is coming from this treatment facility, and unfortunately, we're pumping a PFAS contaminated well to make up that extra 300,000 gallons because it's very hard to meet demand, Sertoli said. There's a lot of pressure on this one facility. Archenklaas then took a brief drive along West Main Street to highlight sewer infrastructure needs tied to schools, housing, and economic development. His first stop was a Norton Town Hall, where he spoke with multiple town officials, including School Superintendent Jennifer O'Neill, Police Chief Brian Clark, Fire Chief Sean Simmons, Library Director Amanda Viana, and Select Board members Alec Rich, Roger Massan, and Bob Kimball. Archenklaas asked O'Neill about school enrollment, which has seen a consistent decline over the past 10 years and is down about 11%. With new development around town, O'Neill said she's interested to see what comes from that in terms of enrollment. This is even more of a reason to have a co-starter, to have co-starter homes and more housing developments now, Archenklaas said. There was further discussion on cell phone policies within the schools and how that could potentially change from being restricted from use during class instructions to being restricted from the whole day, as well as how the mental health of both students and teachers has been declining since the pandemic. When you think about achievement, we're nowhere close to where we were prior to COVID. Students, but also staff, where the burnout is real, O'Neill said. Clark said that the jail diversion grant, which allows for part-time mental health licensed clinicians to work riding along to calls, as well as more availability to services and resource, has helped his offices in the field. We've had it for a number of years, and I can't imagine operating without it, Clark said. Archenklaas said he has heard this across the district, that the program is vital to communities. Literally every single police chief I've talked to has said that the left seat, right seat with a licensed clinical social worker and or mental health professional is a win-win. In the Along the Way column, come and see Seekonk Police Department's new Harley. We're not talking about a motorcycle, but the Seekonk Police Department's new comfort dog. Harley is the new partner of school resource officer Ian Harley. She is an 8-week-old English Labrador. Keep your eyes open for her. She will begin socializing, police said in a social media post. Comfort dogs have become more popular with area police departments, helping calm young and old during stressful events. They also often visit local schools. Mansfield Police has a comfort dog named Bentley, and the Wrentham Police have a comfort dog named Cruiser. Donate food and more in Attleboro. Winter may be behind us, but there are always people in need, no matter what the season. Attleboro Public Library will be collecting food and more to donate to local organizations during the month of April. Boxes for donations will be at the library through Saturday, May 9th. Food pantries are looking for canned goods, non-perishable food items, toiletries, and paper goods, but no glass or expired items. Donations will be given to the Attleboro Area Interfaith Collaborative and the Hebron Food Pantry. And the wilds in our backyard. With the coming of spring, the Attleboro Land Trust is busy with trail maintenance and other projects on its 504 acres of conservation land. On Wednesday, environmentalist/conservatist Charlie Adler, who was a longtime member of the Land Trust, we'll provide an update on what the trust is doing and how you can help. The presentation will be at the Attleboro Public Library, 74 Main Street, starting at 7 p.m. There will be plenty of time for questions and an opportunity to sign up to help with all facets of the organization, including educational activities for families, fundraising, boundary monitoring, habitat restoration, and saving more land. Time travel in Rehoboth. The 1960s and 70s will be in the spotlight Wednesday with a musical performance at Goff Hall at Blanding Free Public Library. The program will feature a return to the music of the coffee houses of the 60s and 70s from Andrew and Marguerite Ferry starting at 6:30 p.m. The duo will share songs from the intimate coffee house and cafes that inspired some of our favorite singer-songwriters, from Bob Dylan and Simon and Garfunkel to the Mamas and the Papas. The Ferris will share the stories behind the music to enrich the musical experience. All ages are welcome. The program is sponsored by the Rehoboth Cultural Council. And the Franklin Museum has new hours. Franklin Historical Museum at 80 West Central Street has new hours. Regular museum hours with free admission are 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Saturdays, 1 to 4 p.m. Sundays, and 5 to 8 on Thursdays. Donations of non-perishable items to the Franklin Food Pantry are accepted. For more information, visit Franklin Museum, 1778.org. Today in history, on April 7, 1994, a day after the presidents of Rwanda and Burundi died in a missile attack on their aircraft, the moderate Hutu Prime Minister of Rwanda, Agathe Uwilingiyimana, and her husband were killed by Rwandan soldiers. In the 100 days that followed, Hutu extremists slaughtered hundreds of thousands of minority Tutsis and Hulu moderates. And in 1862, Union forces led by General Ulysses S. Grant and Major General Don Carlos Buell defeated Confederate forces at the Battle of Shiloh in Tennessee. This has been Nancy reading to you today from Your Sun Chronicle. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for being here with me.